Good morning. You are listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. Here's your local newscast for Tuesday, May 1st. The end of the state's legislative session is just around the corner, and several big issues will be decided in the final few days. As part of our Capital Conversation series, Benta Berkland talks to State House reporters about the agenda and what items could be headed for the chopping block.
I'm here with Patrick Malone with the Pueblo Chieftain, Tim Hoover with the Denver Post, and the Durango Herald's Joe Hannell. It's that time of year when anything can happen under the Gold Dome, and bills that have spent weeks, maybe months on the calendar will meet their fate. Patrick Malone, we'll start with you. Some of these items are near and dear to the governor's heart.
Yes, Governor Hickenlooper has gotten comfortable enough this year, I guess, to throw his weight behind certain pieces of legislation. He went as far as to testify about his own very personal experience about being held back as an elementary school student, and that was in support of a bill that would put some standards around childhood literacy. A year ago, we were hearing complaints from the legislature that the governor was not asserting himself enough, and now that he has, he's seeing an awful lot of the things that he likes killed. In the past week, what could be characterized as a gentle reorganization of agencies that oversee early childhood services was squashed by a House Republican committee. House Republicans poked him in the eye one more time by saying, "Governor, we don't think you're doing enough for victims of a recent fire, and we want to find a way to help them more."
And another bill the governor said he supported is civil unions. He mentioned it during his State of the State address, one of the few items he did talk about, saying, "This is the year this bill should pass." Joe, that measure is still up in the air.
That's right. It just passed the Senate on the exact same margin that it did last year, 23-12. Now it's headed into the House, and the Democrats worked for a long time to try to get a Republican sponsor. They weren't able to do that. Now they're saying it's going to face a very uphill battle in the House. It's hard to say what will happen. There are definitely some Republicans who do support it, but sponsors are starting to say it looks like we might have to wait until next year. Again, these are Democrats thinking that next year they will be in charge of the House of Representatives.
And Tim Hoover with the Denver Post, what other big issues have you been following that are still hanging in the balance?
Well, one issue that everyone thought was going to be this huge battle and that really has kind of fizzled is the telecommunications modernization bill. This is a bill that a lot of telecommunications companies were pushing to in hopes of updating the state laws on telecommunications, and it was opposed by CenturyLink. And the thing is that it appears that CenturyLink may be sort of winning in this because now there's bipartisan opposition to this bill. It may never get off the ground. This was supposed to be one of the biggest battles at the Capitol, tons of lobbyists in on it. Right now, it looks like it's been kind of wounded.
What else, Joe?
Tim, I agree that telecommunications bill was rolled out with great fanfare, and it just kind of disappeared. And when that happens, that almost always means bad news for the bill in question. A couple other bills that might or might not be in that category that we're still waiting for. There's a big drug sentencing reform bill. They're going to take simple drug possession down from a felony to a misdemeanor. We're also looking at reorganizing the state's new Parks and Wildlife Commission. That bill still needs to get through in the last few days here. And finally, the governor has been pushing a reorganization of his energy office, which has been kind of a windmills and solar panels type of an office. He wants to include oil and gas promotion in it. That idea definitely is not popular with Democrats. So that bill is on the block. Pretty much enough to keep us busy for the last couple of days around here.
And Patrick?
Well, I think what some of the lawmakers have discovered is, careful what you ask for, you just might get it, because now that the governor is espousing what he really thinks about certain legislation, it doesn't line up with what they would like it to be. And as long as that's the case, they're probably going to wish next year that he would shut up.
That was Patrick Malone with the Pueblo Chieftain, Joe Hannell with the Durango Herald, and Tim Hoover, a reporter for the Denver Post. I'm Benta Berkland, and you've been listening to Capital Conversation.
Rocky Mountain Community Radio is supported by the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, partnering with the Women's Foundation of Colorado to promote economic self-sufficiency of women and girls.
Western Colorado is high on the list of areas with increased wildfire risk this summer. Dry conditions and changing weather patterns could make for a precarious situation in much of the West. From Aspen Public Radio, Luke Runyon reports.
The formula for wildfire is simple. Air devoid of moisture, acres of dried out or dead trees and brush, high winds, and one tiny spark. With those, a fire can start and then spread across miles of forest quickly. Federal officials say the spark is almost always inevitable, so they're already planning for what could be a very dangerous fire season.
With the amount of dead trees that we have from the bark beetle infestation that's been present there in Colorado, that we have an increased level of hazardous fuels that are on the landscape. And so we are watching the weather very closely. As things start to dry out, that we'll be moving additional resources especially into southern Colorado.
That's Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell. He says much of Colorado's west slope could be ripe for a fire if conditions continue to worsen. If they do, says Tidwell, the Forest Service is prepared to preemptively mobilize for fires. That means setting up helicopters and fire-dousing trucks in areas where a fire could spring forth quickly. Despite the preparation, federal agencies can only manage for risk, what's likely to happen, not what will happen. There's still countless factors out of human control that have yet to coalesce. National Interagency Fire Center's Ed Delgado says several regions are showing signs of potential for wildland fire, but nothing is certain.
We're also looking at what the effects from the low snowpack we had in a lot of the Intermountain West this year, and also where the fuel state is at this point and how that's going to evolve over the next few weeks and couple of months.
One of the main contributors to starting and intensifying a wildfire is weather. If this year's summer monsoon season ratchets up, heavy rain could keep fire risk to a minimum. If it stays dry and windy, fire risk increases. Climate patterns called El Niño and La Niña influence winter weather. Forecasting what the summer rain will look like is far more difficult, according to National Weather Service meteorologist Mike Chamberlain.
In the wintertime, we can say, a La Niña winter is going to produce this and an El Niño winter is going to produce that. And we have a fair degree of confidence in that, but not with the summer monsoon.
For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Luke Runyon.
A finalized fire outlook for the entire country is scheduled to be released today. In a related story, emergency officials in Delta County are considering taking measures to prevent fire outbreaks in this particularly dry year. On Friday, Rob Fiedler, emergency manager for Delta County, told the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel that the county is close to calling for a ban on open fires. According to the Sentinel, Fiedler said, quote, "I've been in this business for 30 years, and I'm scared." He added that Grand Mesa is drying far too quickly for his comfort, with no snow at all remaining below 9,000 feet. Fiedler told the Sentinel that most of the Surface Creek and North Fork communities will be especially susceptible to fast-moving wildfires through nearby pinyon juniper forests. And that has local fire chief Doug Fritz particularly worried this season. In addition to the intensity of the fires, he's also noticed a longer wildfire season than in recent years. On the way home from a wildfire early in April, Fritz texted the IC Change hotline about longer wildfire seasons. KVNF's Julia Kumari-Drabkin went to the Hotchkiss Fire District to hear more about what he's seeing.
You texted IC Change when you were on your way back from a wildfire?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
We went and did a day and a half's worth of work at the Lower North Fork Fire near Conifer. The reason that we ended our day is because we received about 8 inches of snow. We still had some more work to do on the fire, and it snowed, and we couldn't get into it. So it was kind of unusual to have a wildfire with a full team of people working the fire and then have to deal with 8 inches of snow. What we're starting to see now are fires that happen in the early spring and actually early fall. Typically, fire season started like in mid-May, and it was finished up by July 15th.
So you texted IC Change with your observation. What do you want to ask a scientist?
Well, the big picture, just really want to see if there's been a real noticeable trend. Ask if it's possible to have a wildfire in Colorado in virtually any month, not just May and June.
Tune in tomorrow to hear the answer to Doug Fritz's question and to hear more about the wildfire season in western Colorado. A bill to allow children of active-duty military members to pay lower rates than out-of-state students has widespread bipartisan support in the Colorado legislature. The full House debated the measure for the first time yesterday. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
House Bill 1350 would apply to students who spend 2 years attending a Colorado high school, but then move and graduate from high school in a different state. Republican Representative Larry Liston of Colorado Springs says children from military families are often in this unique situation.
And they have little or no say on this as to when their parents are going to be transferred. And in many instances, they would like to be able to come back to school in Colorado.
The students wouldn't get in-state tuition. The rate they would pay would be slightly higher, but significantly lower than out-of-state rates. Democrats introduced a similar bill to offer that same tuition rate to illegal immigrant students who graduate from Colorado high schools. That measure failed in the Republican-controlled House. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
In 2 weeks, the Bureau of Land Management will host a competitive coal lease sale for a 785-acre tract in Gunnison County filed by Oxbow Mining. The BLM's competitive leasing process will sell the lease to the higher bidder who successfully meets or exceeds the fair market value of the coal. The minimum bid for the tract is $100 per acre or fraction thereof. All leases are subject to an annual rental fee of $3 per acre in addition to an 8% royalty payment for developed coal. Oxbow currently operates the Elk Creek mine just north of the town of Somerset. According to the BLM, this federal coal lease contains about 3.8 million tons of recoverable coal, about what Oxbow's mine produces annually, that will be bypassed if it isn't leased. The coal lease sale will occur on May 15th. In other coal news, yesterday the Bureau of Land Management released a preliminary environmental review for the proposed coal lease modifications at the Bowie Mine near Paonia. The draft review indicates that the lease modification will have no significant impact, which cannot be mitigated. The agency evaluated Bowie's plan to add about 500 acres to two existing leases in order to prevent bypassing more than 3 million recoverable tons of federal coal. According to the agency, the coal lease modification area includes private and public surface lands, some of which are BLM managed. The documents are open for public comment and available on the BLM's Uncompahgre Field Office website. Comments must be submitted by Wednesday, May 30th, in writing to the BLM Uncompahgre Field Office in Montrose, or by email to d-dyer@blm.gov. Uncompahgre River users take heed. The river will be high this morning. Today, the Tri-County Water Conservancy District will be conducting tests on the outlet piping at Ridgeway Dam. Starting at 9, water releases from the dam will gradually increase until about noon. According to the district, flows in the Uncompahgre River, immediately downstream of the dam, could reach 1,200 cubic feet per second. Higher flows should be expected along the entire reach of the river to its confluence with the Gunnison River near Delta. Testing should conclude around noon, and flows will then return to normal for this time of year. Anyone planning to use the Uncompahgre River corridor today is encouraged to wait until late afternoon, as the water level could remain high for most of the day. Montrose County's League of Women Voters is coordinating two opportunities to meet candidates for DMEA's upcoming board election. On Tuesday, May 8th, there will be a candidate forum at noon at the Orchard City Town Hall Community Room in Austin. On Wednesday, May 16th, there will be a candidate forum at DMEA's Montrose office at 6 p.m. DMEA members living in Districts 1, 2, and 5 are eligible to run for election this year. More information can be found on the co-op's website at dmea.com. And that concludes your local newscast for Tuesday. For KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day.